Father Hardin, a member of the Society of Jesus, is professor of systematic theology at the Bellarmine School of Theology, Loyola University, Chicago, Illinois. He is author of many books and articles published in the United States, Canada, and Europe. His latest book is Christianity in the 20th Century. Father Hardin is a lecturer and consultant to various national, religious, and educational enterprises. He is renowned as a retreat master and spiritual director. Father Hardin.
For today's two lectures, the titles are, first, The Crisis in Catholic Religious Education, and the second, The Dilemma Facing Teachers of Religion. If we can speak about a textbook for this mini course, I would say it is the General Catechetical Directory. Students are urged to read ahead before class the section with which each cluster of two lectures will deal. There are, as you may have noticed, 6 parts to the General Catechetical Directory. And my intention is to spend 2 lectures for each of these 6 parts. Thus, part 1, which we shall look at today, is called The Reality of the Problem. Our first 2 lectures on crisis and dilemma address themselves, therefore, to the reality of the problem. The crisis in Catholic religious education. Before we enter on a detailed, though necessarily brief, analysis of the subject, I think some introduction is in order. There is scarcely any need of rehearsing for our purpose the variety of difficulties or the multitudinous issues currently involved in Catholic religious education. I doubt if there is a single diocese in the United States or Canada, to just speak of North America, that is not troubled with parents anguishing over the kind of religion being taught to their children, with teachers struggling with parents, administrators, textbook writers, and program directors, with bishops trying, with varying degrees of success, to satisfy on the one hand their admitted responsibility of teaching sound doctrine and morals, which is their mandate as successors of the apostles, while also trying to satisfy the call for updating catechetics. In other words, adjusting religion to modern times. Again, I don't believe there is a single diocese, none that I know of, that is not troubled with pastors often being caught in the impossible situation of maintaining their priestly integrity and at the same time becoming acceptable to 2 different segments of their flock. One group that is uncomfortable, to say the least, with what they consider a doctrineless, or more accurately, a spineless Christianity. And another group that is pressing for a more open-ended, and as they insist, less dogmatic form of religious pedagogy. As we survey the contemporary scene, therefore, it is no wonder if many fathers and mothers are losing their confidence in the value of Catholic schools and religious educational programs, or that administrators and teachers are loath to become further involved in what looks like a turbulent sea of confusion. And the number by now, several thousand of Catholic schools that have closed in the United States since the close of the Second Vatican Council, is among other things, I believe, statistical confirmation of at least the confusion. Yet, as complex as the factors admittedly are, and nobody questions their complexity, the actual state of crisis, which is the immediate focus of this first lecture, is relatively simple to identify, though by no means simple to resolve. Three words, I think, can be used to isolate what I consider the three dimensions of the crisis. They are progress, change, and uncertainty. Let me briefly comment on each term, which symbolizes the background of the crisis. First, to address ourselves to the term progress. The first connotation that comes to mind when we hear this word, progress, is the phenomenal development in science and the spectrum of human achievements in every field of physics and chemistry, biology and medicine, and the incredible marvels in size, shape, and speed, efficiency and multiplicity produced in every form of engineering. I might add, before I was placed by my Jesuit superiors into theology, I had finished my master's work in engineering. Within 4 days, I am giving lectures in Chicago, Los Angeles, and Covington, with plenty of time to spare in between for side trips to Santa Monica, Palatine, and Cincinnati. That is certainly scientific progress. Actually, these achievements are only the external manifestation of a deeper kind of development that has been going on inside of the human spirit, for which the best name is knowledge explosion. The sheer accumulation of new knowledge, more we are told in the past 50 years than in the previous 500 years, has involved not only things material, from subatomic particles on Earth to to the constitution of rock from the surface of the moon. It also includes hitherto unknown data of past history. For example, I am currently teaching the archaic religions of Sumeria and Babylonia. Most of the data about those ancient religious cultures has been unearthed and deciphered since 1900. Unexplored reaches of man's psyche and previously untapped resources governing social phenomena. Every phase of this expanding universe of the mind has made, inevitably, a deep impact on religion, which in the West is mainly Christianity. We shall examine the effects of the impact in later lectures. But something should be said at this point about the real meaning of what some call the knowledge revolution, while others more accurately describe as the scientific revelation. Revelation is not too strong a word for the exposure of reality that has taken place mainly since the turn of the present century. Like other revelations, it unveils things formerly unknown. It not only promises, but already confers benefits previously never thought possible. It demands of most people implicit faith in its assumed, and as all professional scientists admit, unprovable principles. In historic Christianity, these are called dogmas. In science, they are called axioms. And no less an unbeliever than Bertrand Russell admitted in his old age, somewhat apologetically, "Well, maybe I've been too hard on believers with their dogmas. Don't we mathematicians have axioms?" Finally, this scientific revelation has developed a circle of elite that would do credit to the most elaborate religions of history. And I might add, this scientific elite has its own sacred language, which the unenlightened cannot understand. And also an elaborate ritual. Our next area of brief reflection is whatever is symptomized by the word change. Given this unparalleled development in scientific achievements, two effects followed which have drastically affected modern thought and have correspondingly influenced both Christian religion and its communication through what we call religious education. The first effect has been to alter in people's minds the very notion of reality. All reality. Never before in human history have people been more prone to think of reality as not stable, but in process, not fixed, but always in flux, not determined, but by its very essence, open-ended. Or in one phrase, that reality is not constant, but necessarily in perpetual change. Reality, it is argued, is in a process of evolution, where the idea of evolution applied to everyone means that it includes not just the empirical universe, but the one reality that Christians call God. That this process of development applies to everything, including what we used to think were the unalterable constants of human nature, like love, law, and life, and the unchangeable principles of human conduct within man, between men in society, and between man and his Creator God. That has been the first effect. In other words, to make it not only intellectually respectable, but in ever-broadening circles, intellectually necessary to speak of all reality as in process. A second effect of the modern knowledge explosion has been to produce a parallel shift in the way in which truth can come to be known. If truth, howsoever defined, is supposed to be that which conforms to reality, then logically, the true is measured by the same yardstick as the real. Consequently, just as reality is supposedly in constant evolution, so truth is no less evolutionary. What then is true on these premises? It is not, and the modern world could not make a stronger negative, it is not the possession by the mind of an already existing and divinely ordained objective reality. It is rather a search for and a quest. It is the pursuit of a process and the ever-changing approximation of the latest discovery by the human mind. We touch here on what I consider the heart of the crisis facing religious education, though I should quickly add, the crisis facing all education and not only religious, though surely with special poignancy, the area of religion and morality, where man's deepest convictions and securities are now on trial. It is impossible to exaggerate either the depth or the gravity of the crisis. No one doubted that the enormous changes in science and technology would have repercussions in the philosophy of knowledge. After all, man philosophizes after man does. Philosophies always follow human action. What many do not yet realize is that the central objective of philosophy, truth, is now on trial. In the course of a single lifetime, then in a decade, now in a year, we are finding new basal facts and whole attitudes of viewing the universe are undergoing lightning change. So far from slowing down, the changing process shows every sign of speeding up. The term provisionalism has been coined by epistemologists to express something of what is happening. This is not mere skepticism, which is negative, but a growing conviction that whatever we think now, people in a very short time will probably be thinking differently and better. From having been a secure commodity, truth has become a moving function. For the time being, we hold on to certain beliefs while fully realizing that it is only for the time being. As the search for more knowledge goes on, our stock of insight into reality keeps growing, but the fond hope for a stable and sure knowledge of anything must forever be abandoned. It belongs to a former pre-scientific age. So much for the first two dimensions of our subject. Uncertainty. It would be surprising if it were somehow psychologically possible for all this change of attitude about what is truth to be circulating in our culture without producing certain radical changes in people's thinking. The most radical of these changes has been the indication of a state of uncertainty in the minds of millions. As one who teaches mainly Eastern religious cultures, I think I might describe modern Western society Best Buy say that he is symbolized by the question mark? People are simply unsure of themselves. The bestseller, Future Shock, is really a misnomer. It should have been called Present Shock, which I would describe as widespread intellectual insecurity caused partly by hectic pace of change in Western society, but mainly created by the new mythology which claims that everything and its high priests mean everything is necessarily by predetermined indeterminism changing. Just for the record, where I am located, the University of Chicago has a national reputation as being America's stronghold for process philosophy. I speak from deep personal experience. God Himself is part of this process of becoming. As writers like the Canadians, Gregory Baum and Leslie Dewart, Americans like Balthasar and Broughton, Germans like Pannenberg and Moltmann are saying, in by now so many books and periodicals, that no one should any longer doubt the import of their meaning. I am currently directing a doctoral thesis on Pannenberg. If there is anything that man believes in firmly, it is that everything, including the absolute of scholastic theology, the infinite God, is in the process of realizing his eventual future. How could anything else than uncertainty be generated inside the mind if these prophets of process theology are correct, that all reality outside the mind is still becoming, that we cannot confidently affirm of anyone, including ourselves, or the God we believe created us, or of anything, which means the whole universe, that it already and simply is. You don't use that verb. To use such terms as identity crisis would demean the issue and cheapen the seriousness of the crisis we are discussing. It is a crisis which calls for calm appraisal of what is facing modern man.
This conference is continued on Side B.